For a lot of folks around the Bristol Bay region, late August through mid-September can only mean one thing: moose season. For game units around the Bristol Bay area, portions of those 2 months represent the annual fall moose season, though actual dates vary, so make sure you check the regulations for the unit where you hunt. Moose season for many feels like the beginning of fall, a harbinger of cooler months to come, leaves that will fall, and opportunities to fill our freezers with much-needed meat for the winter to follow. Well, at least we hope there's a winter to follow, but I digress. While moose may be, or likely is, the most coveted meat we put in our freezers, it's far from the only thing. There's likely more than a few folks adding spruce hens to their pots and freezers, along with other small game such as ptarmigan and snowshoe hares. Waterfowl enthusiasts are surely taking advantage of the season to lay in a supply of ducks and geese, to augment the moose and salmon already occupying freezer space. And there's one other large game animal that's certainly on more than a few people's radars this fall: caribou. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Caribou are a truly impressive member of the deer family, and for several reasons. Antlers are one of the first things that comes to mind, and sight. While moose can have antlers of much more sheer mass and width, a caribou's large, high-reaching antlers, combined with its relative modest body size, can make for an absolutely breathtaking animal. Also, in many places, caribou can be found in incredibly large herds that inhabit some very wide open spaces. And while the bulls sport the larger sets of headgear, caribou hold the distinction as the only members of the deer family in which both sexes grow antlers. Caribou are a true icon of the North and are found in many mountain, taiga, and tundra areas around the Northern Hemisphere, including Alaska, Canada, Russia, and also the Scandinavian countries of Northern Europe. Scientifically, all caribou are considered to be the same animal, but there are 7 recognized subspecies: barren ground, well, that's most of what we have here; Svalbard, European; finished forest reindeer, Greenland; woodland; and Peary. The only 2 of those found in Alaska are the barren ground and woodland subspecies, while Canada is home to the barren ground, woodland, and Peary. In Europe, caribou are called reindeer. In Alaska and Canada, only the domestic forms of the animal are called reindeer. Additionally, and somewhat muddying the identification process, sport hunting organizations have their own system of classification, which recognizes 5 types of caribou across North America, based on subtle differences in size, appearance, and location. Those 5 types include woodland caribou, Quebec Labrador caribou, central barren ground caribou, mountain caribou, and barren ground caribou. Regardless of the name you choose to call them by, there are somewhere around 5 million of these animals worldwide. I say there's 5 million or so worldwide, but that number is certainly subject to change. Caribou herds are subject to some pretty wild population fluctuations, as those of us here in Alaska well know. The Mulchetna herd, once numbering in excess of 200,000 animals in the 1990s, is now a fraction of that number, though it looks like they are starting to rebound just a bit. Further north, residents near the Western Arctic herd are seeing a similar trend with that herd, which numbered as many as nearly 500,000 animals just a dozen years ago and is now half that number as of the most recent official count. So what causes these fluctuations? There are many factors which can contribute to declining populations, including extreme weather patterns, overpopulation, predation by wolves and bears, and disease outbreaks, to name a few. In many cases, declines are a product of not just one cause, but several, and there's often no clear indication, such as with the Western Arctic herd, as to which is having the biggest impact. Some possibilities for this herd include icing events in the last decade, which affected food availability, and increased numbers of predators, such as wolves and bears. The bottom line is that caribou herds are prone to fluctuations, both up and down, and that worldwide numbers can change mighty quickly. Caribou are pretty easy to recognize, though their color changes quite a bit over the course of the year, varying with the season. In winter, the fur is very long and thick, providing excellent insulation. Winter coat hairs are white-tipped, giving caribou a light bleached-out appearance, often leading to an almost all-white look. In the spring, caribou take on a ragged look, as the winter coat gives way to the summer coat. In the summer and early fall, their color is a dark chocolate brown, with a white neck, rump, and feet, and a whitish stripe that is often visible along the flank. Caribou calves are reddish-brown, with a dark stripe running down the back. As mentioned, despite the huge antlers, they are much more modest in body size, with adult bulls averaging between 300 and 400 pounds and standing 3 to 4 feet high at the shoulder. Cows are smaller, coming in at half to two-thirds the body weight of a bull. They are well adapted to their environment, with large concave hooves that spread out to support their body weight across areas of soft tundra or snow. While both bulls and cows have antlers, those of the adult bulls are much larger, more massive, and intricate than those of adult cows and juvenile bulls. Adult bulls shed their antlers after the rut, while non-pregnant females and juvenile bulls retain their antlers well into the next year. Pregnant females retain their antlers the longest, shedding them after their calves are born. Like other members of the deer family, caribou go through a mating period called the rut. During this time, a bull's neck swells up due to testosterone production. Fighting between bulls begins to happen in early September, after the antlers lose their velvet. While most of these fights are brief and have no serious conclusion, violent fights can and do occur, sometimes to the point of serious injury or death. Additionally, many injured or exhausted bulls are killed by wolves and bears after the rut. Calves are born in late spring. Most adult cows are pregnant every year and give birth to one calf, with twins being a rare occurrence. Wolves, grizzly bears, and eagles kill large numbers of newborn calves. After calving, caribou come together in larger herds to avoid predators and escape the onslaught of mosquitoes and warble flies. These larger groups seek out areas, such as higher elevations and coastlines, that offer relief from insects and the summer heat. Several years ago, during my first summer with the refuge, a group of junior high students got to see this firsthand, as we often saw a small band of bulls standing at the surf's edge on windy days, seeking relief from insects. After insect populations begin to drop, caribou disperse and feed heavily to regain body weight for the coming winter. As mentioned, far and away most of the caribou found in Alaska are barren ground caribou, including those that make up Bristol Bay's Mulchatna and Nushagak Peninsula herds. While the Mulchatna herd has seen a lot of decline over the last 15 years or so, the Nushagak Peninsula herd has been another matter. For those of you unfamiliar with this herd, it's a resident herd found on the Nushagak Peninsula, which is in the southeast corner of Togiak Refuge. When the refuge was formed in 1980, there were very few caribou on it. In 1988, 146 caribou were reintroduced on the peninsula. They fared well and increased to more than 1,200 animals by 2000. Currently, it is believed that there are even just a few more than that, which is actually several hundred more than is optimal for the habitat. There is both a fall and winter federal season for the herd, with the goal of keeping population numbers where they should be, while providing area residents with subsistence opportunities to fill their freezers. A bonus to hunting the herd is that it does not migrate. They're always down there somewhere on the peninsula. Because they are of modest size, caribou are not particularly hard to kill, and anything you'd care to use for a moose is probably actually more than enough gun. Popular old-school calibers such as a 270 or a 30-06 are certainly more than ample. My own plan for this fall is to use a new-to-me Savage Model 99 and 300 Savage. Perhaps a bigger challenge than actually killing them is knowing the distance, as they do inhabit some very open terrain. If possible, have a laser rangefinder on you and be very familiar with your rifle and how it performs across a wide range of distances. No matter what you choose to hunt, if you choose to hunt, do take the time to pick up a copy of the current regulations booklet to make sure you're abreast of all the regulations that apply to where you plan to hunt. And be sure to have a current 2015 hunting license if required, as well as any applicable tags that go with whatever species you plan to pursue. Fresh wild game is certainly a great and tasty way to take the pressure off rising food costs, and a lot more fun than walking the aisles of stores to boot. As always, shoot straight and be safe while you're out there. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.